To come back to where we were last week, we were on firstly Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph. And the last thing I believe we had done was I gave a very brief introduction to the idea of Tumah, ritual impurity associated with vessels. And the only part that I would repeat just to get us into this is that normally a general principle with Kalim, when they become Tame, when they become ritually impure, so the way to remove the Tumah is one of two ways. You either put it in a mikveh, but that only works for most Kalim. It doesn't work for earthenware Kalim, which, by the way, was probably the most common kind of vessel that they actually used. It was probably the least expensive to manufacture, and that was, you know, unless you were a priest who preferred stone Kalim, because stone Kalim are not Makabel Tumah. That's why the archaeologists find, that's one of the ways they know it was a dwelling place of Kohanim in Yerushalayim, when they find the stone Kalim, because stone is a material that's not Makabel Tumah, period. So earthenware Kalim, you cannot immerse in the mikvah. I mean, you can, but it doesn't do anything. It doesn't remove the Tumah. The only way to remove the Tumah from an earthenware kli is to break it. And that's true pretty much for any kli. Any kli can be removed, A, the ritual impurity associated with it can be removed, and B, its capacity to be mekabel tumah, to be able to be susceptible, is removed if you render the kli non-functional. Once it's non-functional, it's not called a kli anymore, and therefore the tumah, if it had tumah, the tumah goes poof, it disappears, and it's certainly no longer able to receive tumah. Now, what happens if you refashion the kli, which would mostly have been metal and glass? So glass, all tumah associated with glass is only rabbinic in nature. It's only midrabanan. The Torah doesn't mention glass at all. I think it's mentioned once in Sefer Iyov. It's not a material of vessels that are susceptible to tumah. But midrabanan, they impose tumah upon it. So metal is susceptible to tumah. At least did we mention what the metals are? There are only seven metals mentioned in Tanakh. Many will know what six of them are, because those are the more common ones, which are gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead. Zav, Kesav, Nechoshes, Barzel, Bedil, and Oferes. They're all mentioned in one pasuk in Parshas Matos, when they bring the spoils back from Midian. And there's a seventh one, which was probably not used as a vessel, but is known as Puch. It was used for eyeshadow, antimony. Those are the only seven metals mentioned. And some poskim believe that when it comes to, for example, immersing your kalim in a mikvah, your clay suda that you tovel before you use when you buy them, some poskim hold that it only applies to the six metals mentioned in the Torah, which is why if you have an aluminum pot, probably the practice is to immerse it before you use it, but you don't make a bracha on it because it's a suffix whether it really requires tevila. So let's go back to metal for a moment. So let's say we have a cast iron pot, and it becomes tameh. If I take the iron and I melt it down, it's no longer a pot. It's now some large block of metal, and there's no more tumah associated with it. But midrabanan, for a couple of possible reasons, they said that if you take this metal chunk now that was tameh before, and you refashion it into a kli, into a pot, it doesn't have to be the same kli, then the tumah pops back. It's only midrabanan. So there is such a thing as tumah. It's called tumah yishana, the old tumah. One might even call it the tumah yishena, the tumah that went to sleep. It disappeared, but it came back. But it's really
so
tumah yishana.
That way, mikvah is better.
What's that?
That way, mikvah is better because you get rid of it for good.
Correct. One could ask an interesting question. I'm sure some Acharon talks about it somewhere. What if you take the block of metal and immerse it in the mikvah, and now you refashion it into a kli? One might argue that it doesn't solve the problem because when you immersed it in the mikveh, it wasn't tameh. And therefore, it didn't dissolve the tumah. Now, when you refashion, it comes back. I would argue the other way. It's a kal vachomer. If tar in a mikveh works for something that's really tameh right now, certainly for something that only has the potential of tumah, it should be able to erase that potential. But you never know. Okay. So anyway, in the Gemara itself, they'd ask the question. We're going to start where I think we left off reading, which is 10 lines from the bottom of the Gemara. And the last line, with the Gemara had started a few lines earlier, Rav Hamnuna had asked the question. He said, Ritech kli la'avodah zara. If a person, literally it means to pour, it's like almost pouring out metal. If you pour it into a mold, a kli for avodah zara purposes, the question he asked was, what is the status of Ritech Kli Lavodas Kochavim? The Gemara originally thought that it referred to someone who made Mishamshei Avodas Kochavim. In other words, a clay that would be used in the service of Avodah Zarah. Someone made that clay. And the question is, when does the clay become Aser Bahana? Right? Avodah Zarah, we spoke about, that's what the Mishnah spoke about. If a Jew makes an Avodah Zarah, if a non-Jew makes an Avodah Zarah, it's a Machlokes, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shmuel, which one becomes Aser when you make it, and which one becomes Aser only when it is worshipped. So now, they thought that Rav Hamnuna's question was, okay, what if I'm not making the Avodah Zarah itself, but I'm making the kelim, the vessels that are used in the worship. I make the incense burner, I make, you know, some other pot or pan or other device that's used in the sacrificial or ritual worship. So when does that become Aser? But the Gemara at the end of the day, after working through the permutations, for whom we were asking the question, says, 1 second, why did you ask Riteh? Why didn't you just say Asa? The question should have been, if a person made a kli as Misham Shavu Dezara, what's the din? I mean, it hasn't been worshipped yet. What's the din? Why do you talk about pouring? So that's why the Gemara turns around and says, on the 10th line from the bottom of Nun Beis Amin Aleph, Rav Hamnuna Mishum Tuma Yishana Kami Boile. Now, Rav Hamnuna was actually interested in the question of Tuma Yishana. What is the status of Tuma coming back? The Tanan. Clay matchus, metal kelim, pshuteim umekablehem temehim. If you have a metal vessel, it doesn't matter whether the metal vessel has a receptacle, has what we call a base kibul, something that can contain, or whether it's flat, it's pashut. Metal kelim or mekabel tuma, regardless. We may have mentioned last week that if you have, let's say, a wooden clay, and it's flat, it doesn't have a toch, it doesn't have a base kibul, a receptacle that could hold something, then it's not mekabel tuma min haTorah. Ordinarily, it's not mekabel tuma min haTorah, maybe not even rabbinically. But metal is the one thing that's mekabel tuma, even though it's flat. Think about a sword. A sword is mekabel tuma. A sword does not have a receptacle. A sword is classic pshutei klei. Its knife is in the same category. So, in that regard, a wooden knife or a wooden fork is not mekabel tuma. A wooden spoon is mekabel tuma because it has a toch. But a metal fork, knife, or spoon are all mekabel tuma min haTorah. So the question now, the Mishnah says, nishtabru tiharu. If the metal vessel was broken, it becomes tar, becomes ritually pure. Any tuma associated with it disappears. But then chazar va'asan kelim. If you turn around and you remake it into a kli, chazru l'tuma yishana. The tuma yishana comes back. Now that would be mikabel tumah, that it's susceptible, hence to forth, mikan ve'elach, from now forward. Of course, you made a new vessel, now the vessel's mikabel tumah. But if this vessel had tumah before it was broken, before it was melted down, so now the tumah comes back. That is a din derabanan. This was Rav Hamnuna's question. Ki hadra tumah, when we say that tumah comes back, maybe that's true by a metal kli, when it becomes tamei, and in many cases it's tamei min haTorah, let's say it touched a dead lizard. So there, the Rabbanon made a gzera that when you melt the kli down and then you reshape the kli, the tumah comes back. But by tumah avodah zarah, let's say you had an avodah zarah where you melt a metal avodah zarah, where you melted down the Avodah Zarah. Now, Avodah Zarah is Tamei. But Avodah Zarah is only Tamei rabbinically. Min haTorah, there's no Tumah associated, no Tumah Vatara technically associated with Avodah Zarah. So the question is, if you melt down the metal idol, and now you refashion it, let's say, into an idol, but it hasn't been worshipped yet. And let's say it's the kind of Avodah Zarah that has to be worshipped in order to become Aser. And any Avodah Zarah that is not Aser yet, in Hana, that you're allowed to get benefit from it, is also not Metame yet. The Tumah presumably only comes when the prohibition of Hana comes as well. I mean, let's assume when it's been worshipped. So the question is, by this Tumah, which is only rabbinic in origin, did they impose that second level, that Gzeira Midrabanon, that if you melt it down and you refashion it, the Tumah comes back? Or was it limited to Tumah, which is the Oraisa?
What was the motivation for having Tumah come back, the Rabbanon?
So the Gemara and Shabbos gives two different reasons. One of them is that they're afraid that people would say that you don't need Harav Shemesh regularly by a kli. Normally, when you immerse a kli, which is Tameh, in order for it to be completely Tahor, you need sunset to come. It has to be Uvaha Shemesh Vitaher. Sunsets, now it's pure. In the interim period, it's called the Tvul Yom. And you can use it with mice or sheni, but you can't use it with truma or kachim. So they were afraid that if you allow someone to melt down a kli and refashion it immediately, and you haven't had harif shemesh, people will say, oh, there's a way to purify a kli without harif shemesh, not realizing it was because you destroyed the kli, and it's basically a new kli. And instead, they'll think when you put a kli in the mikvah, it's also tahor as soon as you put it in the mikvah. So to avoid that, that's the one reason. The other reason that was offered was for really a limited tumah, only for tumas meis. The Gemara says in Shabbos, it's the same sugya, kidei shel tishtachas toras mechatas miyisrael. The story that's told was Heleni Amalka had a bunch of kelim that were tmeim. She wanted to make a party, but she couldn't wait 7 days. So she had her artisans melt down the metal and refashion the kelim. I guess if you were Heleni Amalka, you could afford to do that. And therefore, the kelim were ready that day or the next day. Now, they were afraid that if you allow this to be done, people will no longer bother, you know, why go through the whole process of paraduma and tumah vatara for the kelim? Just melt them down and refashion them. That's the other reason that's offered by the Gemara. The first one seems, I don't know, I'm not sure.
So mikveh needs harav shemesh, but melting down really wouldn't have?
Correct, because when you break a kli, and you refashion the kli, it's what we call panim chadashos ba'olakan. It's a new kli. The old kli doesn't exist anymore. Even when you make it into the same shape, it's almost like you might say gershin isgayer kikatan shenol adami. Like the non-Jew converts, it's like a newborn person. He's born again. So a kli is born again when you melt it down and refashion it. But if you immerse it in the mikvah, so it's not a new kli. It's the same kli, and it's just waiting for harav shemesh. People also require harav shemesh, but there's no need for any kind of gzera because you can't melt people down and refashion them. So that's not a problem. But by kelim, that was a concern. So that was Rav Hamnuna's question. Does this concept of tumah yeshana apply even to rabbinic tumas? Now, one observation that Tosus and the other Rishonim point out here is that there are two kinds of rabbinic tumas. There is tumah about a vessel that's makabel tumah min haTorah, but the tumah is only the Rabbanan. That's what we're dealing with here. You're dealing with a metal idol, which is certainly a metal, it's a kli, it's makabel tumah min haTorah, but the tumah of Avodah Zarah that's associated with it is only rabbinic. Then you can have something where the tumah is potentially min haTorah, but the kli itself is not makabel tumah except midrabbanan, such as glass. Glass, all tumah associated with glass kelim is only midrabbanan. So Tosus points out, there's no din of tumah yeshana by glass. That I think the Mishnah or the Gemara in Shabbos says explicitly. So Tosus asks, what's Rav Hamnuna's question? If there's no concept of the tumah coming back by a glass kli, which is only the tumah is only drabanan, what was he asking? So Tosus says that yes, when you have something that's only mekabel tumah mid the rabanan, then even though the tumah that might be associated with it is tumah daraisa, let's say the glass kli touched a dead cow, nonetheless, there's no din of tumah yeshana if you melt the kli down and refashion it, because the entire tumah of the kli is only midrabanan. Rav Hamnuna's question was, by a kli that potentially really is mekabel tumah min haTorah, but the nature of the impurity that it receives in this case is only rabbinic, is only midrabanan. That was Rav Hamnuna's question. So that's what he wanted to know. So now, so you wanted to know, is that true? Hani mina the tuma daraisa of al tuma the rabbanan lo o dilma lo shna? Perhaps it makes no difference. So now the Gemara says, 1 second. This is so classic rabbinic. You ask a question, and instead of answering your question, they ask you, why are you asking the question? Right. So now he says, v'tiboy le shar tumas the rabbanan. Why are you asking about some abstract, you know, very unusual tuma, tumas avodah zarah, which is the Rabbanan? Well, there are all sorts of tumas that float around that are the Rabbanan. You could ask about tumah yeshana. There's tumas yadayim that we encounter all the time. Stam yadayim are tmeos. So maybe if I touch the kli, you know, or I touch liquid and the liquid touched the kli, it happens all the time. That's tumah the Rabbanan. And now I melt the kli down or refashion it. Why don't you ask about that tumah the Rabbanan? You pick tumas avodah zarah. How often do you encounter this? So the Gemara says, no, actually, chada migo chada kamiboy le. Echad mitoch echad. He was asking, meaning he wanted to know both actually. Tumah the Rabbanan mihadra olo. Number one, is there tumah yishana by kelim by tumah that's only the Rabbanan generally? Im tim salomar lo hadra tumah lo hadra. If you want to say no, that would be what we would call gzera l'gzera. Gzera number one is that the tumah itself is only the Rabbanan. Number two, to say that a kli that's melted down and refashioned, the tumah comes back, that's also only the Rabbanan, and that's what we call gzera l'gzera. We don't want that. So even if you do say that, Im tibsa lomar lo hadra, nonetheless, tuma davodas kochavim, the ritual impurity associated with avodah zara, mishum chumra davodas kochavim, because we're so machmir by avodah zara, mishavi rabbanon ketuma daraisa olo. Perhaps this was an exception. Even if, generally speaking, the tuma the rabbanon, we don't say, we don't have the gzeira of tuma yeshana, maybe when it comes to avodah zara, where the chachamim made lots and lots of fences because avodah zara is such a terrible thing, maybe there they would have said that the tuma yeshana comes back. And the Gemara's answer, of course, is teku. Marshall,
is there a conceptual category of the rabbanans that are given halachic status, or is this assumed generous cul-de-sac that is over every time?
So the answer to that question is yes. There are not all the rabbanans were created equal. Let me give you two examples: one which is a more substantive example, and one which is a little bit more pragmatic example. There is a Ritva, I think, in Rosh Hashanah, who claims, and I don't know what the specific ramifications are for this. We have a notion in the Gemara, something called an asmachta, where the Gemara learns something from a pasuk, it cites a pasuk that looks like it's a real din min haTorah, and yet the Gemara says it's only rabbinic, it's asmachta bi'alma, it's only derabbanan. So the Ritva who claims that, and I don't remember what the specific reason is, it must be something in that context, that rabbinic laws that have an asmachta really are things that the Torah should have prohibited, but God didn't want to be so strict and severe with us, and therefore it wasn't min haTorah, but the Chachamim identify the hint in the Torah where it should have been, and we're more, sometimes more machmir by dinim which have an asmachta. So that's one kind of rabbinic law. We're more machmir because maybe it should have been midaraisa. But to take sort of another one, which...
One of those.
What?
What's one of those? Like, just draw out an example.
What, to pick an asmachta? Oh, goodness gracious. They're all over Shas, but I don't have one. Yeah, I'm trying. It's one I see in my head, in Yom on the 8th parak, but I'm trying to remember what it's about. Somebody was throwing something out?
Asmachta Lokanya.
That's very funny, but no, that's not this kind of asmachta.
That's the only thing that came up to my mind.
I understand. That's a major halacha category. Believe that there. I'll try to remember to get you one for next week. If you have my email, send me an email. I'll dig out. It's easy to find. I just don't have it at the front of my brain. The second one is something that I don't think we explored yet, but we may touch upon at the end of the Masechta, maybe a year or two from now, God willing, is the following concept. And this is actually very, very much halacha lemaisa. And we've learned some of the materials, but I'll review it a little bit. We have, when we use kelim with non-kosher food, so we say the kelim become treif. But if you clean the kli out, you clean the vessel out, the reason why we don't allow you to use it is because we're concerned that the kli absorbed some of the flavor of the non-kosher food, and when you cook the next food in it, it will emit that flavor, and therefore that's aser as well. But we also learned that if you wait 24 hours, generally speaking, and you cook non-sharp food in the kli, not onions, not raw onions, but you cook most things in the kli, if the kli was clean, then this is halacha lemaisa. If someone cooked bacon in the kli, it's clean, waited 24 hours, and now cooks kosher meat, you're not allowed to cook the kosher meat, but you're allowed to eat the meat that was cooked in it. Because we say that a kli which is not ben yomo only gives a negative flavor, is no sein tam lifgam, and therefore, b'dieved, you're allowed to eat the food. You're not allowed to cook lachatchila on the pot, but you can eat the food. That isser of cooking in the pot is in isser de rabbanon. It's an issur de rabbanon. Fine. That's step one. Step two, the assumption we have is that when it comes to earthenware kelim, earthenware vessels, which includes china, that doing hagala, which is the way we kasher kelim, doesn't work. It doesn't get all the flavor out, and therefore you're not allowed to use. You can't kasher klicheres, and even after 24 hours, where the flavor that it will emit will be negative, will be no sein tam lefgam, you're still not allowed to use it. It's still part of the gezeira. Okay. That's step one. Step two, there is a Yushalmi in Trumos that says that when it comes to Truma, which is only the Rabbanon, which might be all Truma today, and Truman Chutz La'aretz, if you have an earthenware vessel that absorbed Truma, you can do Hagala three times on it, and then you're allowed to use it. In other words, even though, ordinarily speaking, Hagala, putting it boiling water in it, doesn't work on a Kli Cheres, doing Hagala three times by Truma, which is only the Rabbanon, is permitted. That allows you to use the Kli. Okay. So comes along the Baal HaItur. Baal HaItur, I think, was from Provence. I'm not sure. Comes along the Baal HaItur and says the following. If you have a Kli, which is China, okay, and it became Treif, If you wait till after 24 hours from when it was last used, you can kasher china by simply immersing it three times in boiling water, doing Hagala three times. That's a tremendous, tremendous kula, right? We usually think when you chafe china up, you throw it away. The Rashba in the Torah Sabayis, which was the precursor to Yoredeah, to the Torah Yoredeah, the first part at least, the Rashba quotes this Bala Itur. He actually accepts it, but he points out that it's not entirely clear it's correct. He suggests that this Yerushalmi might only apply to Isurim, which Ikaram are Midrabanan, which are at their fundamental root are only the Rabbanan. So in this case, the Truma, when you had the Truma sitting in front of you, for a non-Kohen to eat it, was only Nisad Rabbanan, because the Truma wasn't Truma Minat Torah, because there's no obligation to separate Truma when there's no, when there's no Yovel, there's no Shemitah, whatever it is, whatever makes Truma Bezman Hazeh, still is the Rabbanan, even in Israel. Truma to Truma Semaisus is only the Rabbanan today. So nonetheless, so that's completely the Rabbanan to start with. But if you take a kli and you cook chazir, you cook bacon in it, that's an issur d'oraisa. Now you wait 24 hours and it's reduced to an issur d'rabbanan. That's an issur d'rabbanan that ikaro is d'oraisa, and therefore the kula of the bala itur doesn't apply. Unfortunately, the mechaber, even though the Rashba himself thinks the bala itur is correct, the mechaber doesn't accept the bala itur in Shulchan Aruch. He paskins that doing Hagalah three times on Klei Cheres, on earthenware vessels, only works by things that are Ikaram D'Rabbanan, which is not easy to define. Although probably, I wouldn't be surprised if the poskim say, there's a machlokus in the first place, if you have kelim that were cooked in by a non-Jew, and they're also, whether or not Bishul Akko makes the Klei Aser. But I think the kula of the bala itur should apply by Bishul Akko. Even if you say that Bishul Akko makes the Klei Treif, and let's say it's an earthenware Klei, you should be able to kasher with the bala itur's leniency, because Bishul Akko is completely Midrabanan, right? There's no in the food itself. There's no concern about tarfus. Probably, it's this bala itur is used, by the way, frequently by poskim, not outright, but it's used in different kinds of situations as one building block in building a kula. For example, Rav Moshe says in dealing with bala tshuva, where there's a concern. You know, sometimes they have very expensive family china, and they become balei tshuva, and you don't want to impose an undue burden on it. So Rav Moshe takes a number of kulos that he puts together, one of which was a shita of the Chacham Tzvi, that after 12 months, you could use a kli because it's an isyashen, and there's no flavor at all. He takes that, he takes the balei itur, he has a couple of other tzadim, why one can be mekel, so poskim do use this balei itur. But my point, to answer your question, Marshall, to make a long story short, but a fun story, is that you see that there are different kinds of the rabbanans. There are the rabbanans there that are Karm Bidaraisa, and things that are considered completely Karm the Rabbanon. So the answer is yes, we do sometimes distinguish within the Rabbanons.
What's okay. The basis of the Bala Itur?
This Yushalmi. It's an explicit Yushalmi. That's what the Yushalmi says.
That earthenware is.
The earthenware, you can kasher if by doing it by doing Haggadah three times. That's
what did we really posek today about China?
So I think we treat it as Klei Cheres ordinarily. And except for under extenuating circumstances, not under... Well, so that's an interesting question. When you look at poskim, I've seen Shuvas of Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, the Malam in the Hoel, where they're dealing with porcelain, which they weren't really sure how, what its status was. So you'll see that he'll combine. Maybe porcelain anyway is in Cheres. Maybe it doesn't absorb because it's more like glass. And then if you do Haggadah three times, you know. So in other words, this is a shita that is used, but it's generally speaking not used outright. I don't think any posek would tell you that if you happen to trafe up one plate that you could just do Haggadah, you know, glazed china, I don't think anybody would say that, you know, you could do Hagalan three times. You know, maybe if it was your entire set and it's a Hefsid Merubah and something like that, you can start to put things together. So we never generally rely upon the Bala Ether straight out, but we often combine it, and especially in situations that are Shasat Chak, real difficult situations, then we're more likely to use the Bala Ether. Again, the Bala Ether, we do paskin like in theory, the Shulchan Aruch never actually quotes it, by things that are purely Ikarim D'Rabbanan. But since most of the tarfus that we often deal with is not that way, right? In other words, someone really got treif meat or treif obasa b'chalav or something, so you're dealing with something that's Ikaro D'Raisa, and so we don't rely upon the Bala Ether outright. Okay. When we get to the end of the Masechta, again, there'll be a little bit of time, but we should hopefully have a chance. We're going to do Hechshek. We did a little bit of this, actually. We took a detour, I don't remember when, in the last year or two, because of the timing of something, so we did before Pesach, I think. We did some Hagas Kelim, but we'll do Chazar on it, I promise.
What's that? Are you asking them to use modern stainless steel pots for milk inflation?
Yes, right. Right. You just better. Everybody better understand. Sitting around the table wasn't there. That Marshall's just being a little bit. I don't know, facetious there.
Only a little bit.
Your
phrase was, I believe it is clearly correct. No Gundel, I think, will at any time soon be willing to say that.
I'll stand by that statement, but I didn't paskin that it's mutter. Okay. So anyway. So that's the question. The Gemara says, Rav Hamnuna's question was, does Tumah Yishana, is there a din of Tumah Yishana by Tumos which are Drabanan? And even if you say that there isn't, might the case of Tumah associated with Avodah Zarah be an exception to the rule? Then the answer is Teiku, and I probably said this a long time ago, what does Teiku mean? So everybody knows Teiku means the question isn't answered, but we usually say Teiku means
Tishbi
Yitare, it's Kushyus Rabbis. It's an acronym that Tishbi, Eliyahu HaNavi, will come and he will answer all the questions, all the unanswered questions. Of course, the problem with that is that he would be pretty busy. The problem is that we don't believe that Nevuah is given in order to give us Torah. Only Navi who ever received Torah and Halacha was Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody gets it after that. For the Rambam, if a Navi came and said that God told me the Halacha was X, even if it's the correct Halacha, we would kill the Navi as a Navi Sheker because God didn't talk to him, didn't give him a Halacha and Nevuah. But the real origin, I once tried tracking this down, so I asked for Shechter, and he said there's a Shita Mekubetzes on Gittin. You have to understand his Bekias. We don't have the Shita Mekubetzes on Gittin, but there once was a Shita Mekubetzes on Gittin, which the Chidah quotes in one of his Svarim, who says this pshat, that Teiku stands for Tishbi Yitaretz Kushas Rabayis. The real meaning of the word Teiku is just a short, as in often in Bavli Aramaic, a mem fell off at the end. Teikum, it means the question stands. That's all the word means.
Huh.
Okay, Hakusha Omedes. All right, fine. Boimine. Rabbi Yochanan me Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yochanan asked Rabbi Yanai the following question. Tikroves avodas kolchavim shel ochlim mahu. So we already learned that if you have tikroves avodah zarah, you have food, let's say, that was sacrificed to avodah zarah, even though the avodah zarah itself can have bittul, the tikroves has no bittul. Tikroves remains also forever. The goy cannot be mevatel the tikroves. So, however, the question, which is a little bit of an odd question, Mima Hanyaluhu Bitul Litarinu Mituma Olo. Granted that the Tikrovas Avodah Zarah will not become Mutar Bahana, but would being Mvatalit remove the Tuma from it? The Tuma is only the Rabbanon. Maybe Bitul works partially. If not to permit the Tikrovas Avodah Zarah Bahana, which is prohibited in the Torah, at least maybe to remove the Tuma in the Rabbanon.
What would Bitul look like for food?
What's that?
What would Bitul look like?
Well, the guy consecrated it, and now he says, you know what? I don't like this Avodah Zarah anymore. This food, the way Sammy's mouth Avodah Zarah, I never thought about it until you asked the question.
Yeah.
You should have asked me a different question. Why is it that the Krovis Avodah Zarah is not Betela? We have a Pasuk. The Gemara is a Pasuk. Correct. That's the Pasuk, but okay. I never stop until you ask the question now. What's the Svara behind it? Your question, I think, provides the obvious Svara. I know what it means when a goy says, "I'm a vatlas of Avodah Zarah." It means we don't worship it anymore.
What maisa could you do to the food to make it?
Well, the goy could eat part of it. How's that? Assuming that I agree. But the point I think your question highlighted for me is that the reason perhaps why Tikrovas Avodah Zarah is not batel is because what does it mean to be mevatelit? In other words, Avodah Zarah, presumably because Goyim use it, they set up as their god and they worship it. Mishamshe Avodah Zarah Aser for the same reason. But Tikrovas Avodah Zarah, why is it Aser? It's Aser because the Goy used it to worship the Avodah Zarah, which might be the reason, the Svara behind why it's not batel, because what was done was done. What does it mean to be mevatel? Now the answer is it might be mevatelit by taking the food. You know, normally when we have a carbon, we have food, except for the parts that are meant on the Mizbeach, are supposed to burn on the Mizbeach, the parts that are done, whatever you do with them, you do with them, but you don't have someone then go and then use them for another purpose. So maybe if the guy decides to use it for another purpose, that constitutes batel. And even though he hasn't finished using it, maybe that would be bittul. For example, and again, it's the mechanism is the same, but the underlying svara might be different. A couple of mishnayos from now, we're going to get to, the mishnah talks about how a guy is mevatel with his arm. I mean, what is the sign that he was mevatel it? If he punches it, if he spits on it, what if he sells it?
Well,
Right. So it happens to be that in some, according to some opinions, under some circumstances, maybe all opinions under some circumstances, if a goy sells an avodah zara to someone, let's say he knows is not going to worship it, is going to melt it down, let's say, so it's batel. The sale is an act of bittel. So arguably, maybe to krovas avodah zara, the same thing would be true.
So this is different than what we had before. Before you're talking about actually melting it down, getting rid of the thing, and then reconstituting it.
Agreed.
It was okay, right.
But remember
here
also.
The source of the tumah is from avodah zara, so if somehow we can get rid of the avodah zara name from it, then the tumah will go. Or do you say the tumah just persists?
Oh, 1 second. No, so you're asking a different question. The Gemara is going to ask on the next amud. We're going to talk about the next amud, which is what happens if a guy is mevatel on avodah zara? Does the tumah still exist, or do you have to put it in the mikveh? And the answer is the tumah doesn't exist anymore. If the iser disappears, the tumah flies away also.
With the wax from the priest, so that was something that had been used as part of avodah zara.
That was mishamshe. That wasn't tikrovus, but it was mishamshe avodah zara, noy avodah zara.
But he negated it.
Correct.
Selling it.
Right, but that the Gemara, the Rishonim aren't talking about Tumah V'Tahara. They didn't observe Tumah V'Tahara. So it's conceivable, reading Tosfos, that we saw about the wax candles, it could still be that it's Tumah, it's just that it's Mutter. Right? There are lots of things that are Tumah. My watch is Tumah, but it's Mutter V'Hanah, I can use my watch. So that in itself, you could have argued that it becomes Mutter, but the Tumah remains until you stick it in the mikveh. I think the Gemara is going to say, on the top of the next Amah, that if the Isser, which is the Raisa, disappears, when you Mevatel Avodah Zara, the Tumah certainly disappears.
Well, I was saying, it's just that the first above we said, what happens when you get rid of the object itself, the kli? And we said, right, that's what our question was. Now we're saying something else. We're saying, let's say you don't get rid of the kli, but you get rid of the avodah zara. Does that make the tumah go away?
Agreed.
You're saying just logically that the way.
Correct. So really, the next step should have been that, but the Gemara has jumped the line a little bit because it's gone to the step. In other words, it's one thing to say if I'm mevatel avodah zara, the guy's mevatel avodah zara, the tumah, the issur disappears, therefore the tumah disappears. But the question of the Gemara is really, the question of the Gemara is almost predicated on already knowing that, which it's only going to state a few lines from now, that of course if the Isser disappears, then the Tumah will disappear. But
it
here...
The Sheretz is gone, but it's there.
1 second. Yeah. But if the answer to this question is that being Mevatel, the Avodah Zarah, being Mevatel the Tekrovus Avodah Zarah, even though the Isser Hana remained, but the Tumah disappears, then certainly a Kli, where an Avodah Zara, where the Tumah disappears, where the Isser disappears, certainly the Tumah is going to disappear. Right? So that the truth is that question is almost being assumed in this question. Because if when you Mevatel an Avodah Zara, the Isser disappears, but the Tumah doesn't, then certainly if you Mevatel Tekroves, the Tumah is not going to disappear, because the Isser doesn't even disappear. So the Gemara, in asking this question, Rabbi Yochanan is almost assuming what the Gemara is going to state on the next Amud. So now, the Gemara says, V'tiboy le kelim. Ask about kelim. So Rashi says, what does kelim refer to here? Not to krovas avodah zara. Not that you broke a staff in front of the avodah zara. It was mishamshe avodah zara. So the Gemara is in effect almost asking your question, but not about avodah zara, about mishamshe avodah zara. Why didn't Rav Yochanan ask what happens by mishamshe avodah zara? If the guy is mevatel, 1 second, Sam. If the guy is mevatel the kli, why doesn't the Gemara ask? Does the tumah disappear as well? So the Gemara answers: kelim lo kami boile, kevan de islehe tara b'mikva, tumanabi b'tela. Since it has Tara b'mikvah. Now Rashi writes something very funny here. Look at the third Rashi from the bottom of the page. It's five narrow lines up. Kevan de islahu Tara. What's the Tara in a mikvah? Rashi says, Kishar tumas b'mikvah. Hocha de mikvah didei hainu bitul. So here, what is the mikvah of an avodah zara kli? Bitul. So, kevan de isura batul minayu, tumah v'adainami salka. So that's what Rashi understands the Gemara's response, that by Misham Avodah Zara, which definitely had Bittul, certainly of an Avodah Zara guy. So Rashi says, you know what the mikveh is? The mikveh is Bittul. Since Kalim have Tara and a mikveh, food does not have Tara and a mikveh. Right? I don't know if we mentioned this last week. All Kalim except for Klei Cheres can be purified in a mikveh. Food, there's only one kind of food that you can purify, and it's not through Tevila. It's water, and water can only be purified through Hashaka, through having a touch the other waters. So Rashi says that just since Kalim have Tara and a mikvah, by Avodah Zara, the Kli Shal Avodah Zara, the Misham She Avodah Zara, the mikvah for that is Bittul. So that's why the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan, then asks this question. Ki kami boile ochlim, food which has no bittul, that has no tar in the mikveh, and also the bittul doesn't make it mutabana. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan's question was. So now the Gemara says, ah, v'ti boile sam, avodas kochavim gufa. Why not ask about Avodah Zarah itself? If you're Mevat on Avodah Zarah, does the Tumah disappear? So the Gemara says, no, Avodas Kochavim Gufa Lo Mi Boile, Kevan Di Surah Batil, Tumah Nami Betela. Again, if the Isser can disappear, which is Midaraisa, then certainly the Tumah disappears. Ki Kami Boile, Tikroves Lavodas Kochavim Shel Ochlem Mai. Kevan the Isurei lo batil kid Rav Gidol, that was Rav Gidol's drasha about Zivchei Mesim. Since the Isur doesn't disappear, Tumi Nami lo batela, Odilma, maybe Isur de Araisa lo batil, but Tumah de Rabbanon is batil. Maybe the Tumah could disappear. Teku. Okay, it's an interesting question. The Rishonim don't, as far as I've seen, explain why. What was the? It's a funny hava, Mina. Why would you think if the Isur doesn't disappear that the Tumah should disappear? If it's Aser Bana, it means it's still connected to Avodah Zarah. It's still defiled with the Isser of Avodah Zarah that's been done with it. Why would you think that the Tumah de Rabbanon would disappear? Okay. I don't know. Fine.
Theory?
So what?
Do you have a theory?
I don't. It's hard to, you know... Again, I know the path down which you have to go, but I still don't know exactly... I'm not sure how that path goes, which is you have to think about why they would go their Tumah on Avodah Zarah. Right? Is it a function of somehow keeping people away from it? Is it if that's the case, maybe you could say once somebody was mevatel it, even though it's still aser bana, you know, again, why would the Tumah disappear? And if it has to do with the stringency of Avodah Zarah, the idea that Avodah Zarah defiles the world, also, why if it still has the Isser of Avodah Zarah, why should it disappear? But I would think that the route, you know, the road down which you have to go in order to find an answer has to do with what exactly is at the core of the Gzeirat Darbanan. Why would they go Zer Tumah on Avodah Zarah? Okay. All right. We're not done asking questions. Now we get to a very interesting story. Boy mine Rabbi Yose ben Shol me Rabbi. Kalim Shishimshu Bahem be Beis Chonyo, Mahu Shishtamshu Bahem be Beis Amikdash. Beis Chonyo. What is Beis Chonyo? So Chonyo in Greek is Onias. There was a temple in Egypt maintained by Jews. In, I think, Yev was the location. I don't remember what the modern, what the contemporary Egyptian name for that place is. I'm not interested in the history behind it, the technical history. I'm more interested in the rabbinic story behind it, because that's the one that's relevant here. And I don't know if Josephus' account actually, you know, coheres with the rabbinic account, but I don't care for the moment. The Gemara Menachos tells the story that when Shimon HaTzadik was at the end of his life, so when he entered, after one Yom Kippur, he came out and told them that he was going to die that year. And they asked him how he knew. So he said, because every year when he would enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he would be accompanied by an angel clothed in white, and the angel would accompany him out. But that year he was accompanied in by an angel wearing black, and then he was not even accompanied out by the angel on his way out. And he became sick, and he died within 7 days. And he had two sons. One son's name was Chonyo, and the other one's son, other one's name was, I don't think it was Shimon. I know it was also Shimon. What?
Shimmy.
Was it? Okay. Fine. Your art school is kind enough to film. Thank you. And basically, he decided to give the award Chonyo. He was younger by a couple of years, but he wanted him to be the Kohen. He said he should be the Kohen Gadol. So there are two versions to the story. The first version to the story is that his older brother, who was very upset, told him that what you should do, what you're supposed to do, as your first act as Kohen Gadol, is to put on this leather garment and put on this tzilzul katan, it means a little belt, it might sound like a garter or something like that, and go do avodah on the mizbeach, which obviously was an outrage. And when he did that, the Kohanim were ready to kill him. And his brother went and told the Kohanim, he promised his wife that would be his first act when he became Kohen Gadol. Right? This is showing his love for her. And they wanted to kill him. So he fled to Egypt, and he founded his own temple Avodah Zarah there. That's one version. The second version of the story is that Chonyo, refused. He didn't want to supersede his older brother. But he was still mekanei him so much, he couldn't control himself, so he gave Shimi the advice to do exactly in the reverse story, and tried doing the same thing. But when the Kohanim ganged up to kill Shimi, he said, this is what Chonyo told me to do. Then they went after Chonyo, and they chased him. They didn't catch him. He got to Egypt, but he set up a mikdash l'Hashem. So basically, the Gemara has a machlokas atanaim, where the base chonyo was a base of Avodah Zarah, or it was actually Lashem, but it violated the problem of shchutei chutz, right? Shechting an animal outside of the base hamikdash, certainly in a time when the base hamikdash is standing, maybe even when it's not. So that's the two views in the Gemara. It's near, it's like one, almost the last daf, not quite in Menachos, about base chonyo. So either it was Avodah Zarah or it was Lashemayim.
Is there any historical writing on this stuff?
I'm sure Josephus writes about the Temple of Onias in it, but I don't know what Josephus actually says. My suspicion is that the historical evidence would probably point in the direction that it was Mizbeach Lashem. It wasn't the Mizbeach L'Avodah Zarah. That would be my guess. But for our purposes, it's important to consider the following. A Kohen who has worshipped Avodah Zarah is not eligible to serve in the temple. He's probably allowed to eat kachim and allowed to eat truma, but he's not eligible to serve in the Beis HaMikdash once he has done Mishamish L'Avodah Zarah. This is, by the way, a very interesting medieval question, but you have to ask my wife more about this. I think some Rishonim hold, and maybe it's the, I don't know if it's explicit in the Gemara, that a Kohen who apostatized, who worshipped Avodah Zarah, should also be disqualified from Duchening. But this issue came up already with Rabbeinu Gershom, if I'm not mistaken, and Rabbeinu Gershom ruled absolutely the Kohen is allowed to Duchen. And the reason why he didn't want the opposite conclusion is because he didn't want an impediment to Tshuva. It was Takanas HaShavim. But this is, I think, apparently a big issue about Duchening, a Kohen who worshipped Avodah Zarah. We do know that a Kohen who killed someone, even B'Shogeg, is not allowed to Duchen. Right, a Kohen Sheharag, Lo Yisus Kapa, because Yedechem Damim Alei, right? He can't put his hands out in blessing because his hands shed blood. Even Mishogi, even murder unintentionally, is considered murder. So anyway, a Kohen Sheshimesh L'Avodah Zarah is disqualified from doing service in the temple. He can eat matzos besoch echov, as the Yechezkel's expression goes, but he cannot, the Yechezkel of Devar Yamim, but he cannot actually serve anymore.
He's a soldier. The Kohen was a soldier.
I don't remember, but I'm not sure it's any different. And remember, in the Torah, the Kohanim aren't actually don't go to war. I don't believe the Kohanim and Levim. So I don't know what the. That's a very interesting question. Maybe one Sunday when we have a special shiur, not the regular shiur. Maybe if you remind me, I'll do a little research to see how that issue is handled. But in the meantime, the Gemara says the following. Kalim sheshimshu bohem beveis chonyo. If there were kalim used in the temple of Onias for the sacrificial worship, mahu sheyishtamshu bohem beveis hamikdash. Can they be used in the beis hamikdash? The kamiboy lei aliba demanda amar beis chonyo la beis avodas kochavmi. The whole question is only according to the shita that the temple of Onias was not avodah zarah. I mean, if it was avodah zarah, it would undoubtedly be disqualified. It would be, even if you are mevakel the yisur hana, it's mois lagavoh, right? Like if you worship an animal, the animal doesn't become asur b'hana because it's a bal chai, but you're not allowed to bring it as a karban, right? Bal chayim, if you worship your own animal, you bow down to your own cow. So the bal chai is not asur b'hana, but it is asur lagavoh. So that would have been no question. But here, what did he do? They used it for shchutei chutz. They didn't avera, but it wasn't avodah zarah. So the Gemara says, the whole question is Aliba the Mandamar Beis Chonyo was not a base of Avodah Zarah. The Tanan, Kohanim Sheshim Shuba Beis Chonyo Lo Lisham Shuba Mikdash Yerushalayim Ve'eino Tzarech L'davar Acher. That's the Mishnah in Menachos, that Kohanim who served in Beis Chonyo are not allowed to serve in the temple, even though Beis Chonyo is not a base of Avodah Zarah. How do you know that? Because Ein Tzarech Lomar, it's a Kavachomer, Kohanim who worship Avodah Zarah. Davar Acher is a euphemism. So obviously the Mishnah believes that Beis Chonyo is not a Beis Avodah Zarah, but it says Kohanim who worship the Beis Chonyo are disqualified in the Mikdash, and a Kavachomer, a Kohen who worshipped Avodah Zarah. But the question is the following. Kohanim who dekansin Rabbanon Mishum Demedeyaninu. Perhaps the reason why there's only a din de Rabbanon. There's no din doraisa that a Kohen who violated Shchutei Chutz cannot worship them in the temple. It's only a din by Avodah Zarah. But the Rabbanon would go there by a Kohen who, at least Bebeis Chonyo. I don't know if they would go there at every Kohen if he did Shchutei Chutz, but a Kohen who served in that temple is disqualified.
This is forever or until he does Tshuva?
Forever.
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 So why is it not derived?
Because, in other words, the question is, the Torah doesn't actually talk about even Avodah Zarah, but the Psukim in Nevi'im, in Devar Hayamim, I think, maybe in Malachim, you know, that Chazal interpret seem to be are only by Avodah Zarah.
Doesn't it specifically say in Dvarim that you should only bring them?
No, so that, yes, but a Kohen who ate Chazir is not permanently disqualified for serving in the Mikdash. There's all sorts of Aveiros somebody could do, they don't necessarily disqualify a Kohen. Right? Certainly if he did Tshuva. So the Gemara wants to know, maybe the Knas the Rabbanan is only on Kohanim. Mishum the Bnei Dea Ninu. They knew what they were doing and they shouldn't have been doing it. Aval Kalim lo. The Kalim didn't do anything wrong and the Kalim weren't genuinely defiled because it wasn't Avodah Zarah. So what's the din? Odilma lo shna. Perhaps, it makes no difference. They would go there broadly. Amar le asurim heim. He said it's asur. Umikra haya biyadeinu ushachnuhu. I had a pasuk. But I forgot the pasuk. Who would he ask it from? Rebbe. Rebbe Yosef, Rebbe Shbenshol asked Rebbe the question. Rebbe said, it's also, we had a pasuk, but I forgot what the pasuk is. Rebbe was a busy man. He had a lot of affairs of state to deal with. I always like to say, I'm not sure, we say that Rebbe is responsible for the Mishnah. I don't think it was Rebbe alone. I think it's very clear, he had Talmidei Chacham in his base medrash, so he was involved, but he was a pretty busy man also. So Esavei, they asked the question, maybe Rabbi Yosef ben Shaul asked, Kol ha-kelim asher hizniach ha-melech achaz b'malchuso b'ma'alo. So the Kohanim came to Chizki and said that all the kelim that the king Achaz, Chizkiah's father, had been mazniach, almost cast off, and Achaz instituted Avodah Zarah in the temple. So b'ma'alo, in his dealing treacherously with God, in his me'ilah, hechanu, we prepared v'hikdashnu, and we sanctified. My love, doesn't that mean hechanu, the atbilinu, we prepared it by purifying it. Hikdashnu, the atashtuninu, we sanctified it. Rashi says we anointed it with Shemen HaMishcha so it could be reused. Now, there's one problem immediately, 1 second. Achaz worshipped Avodah Zarah. Achaz's biggest problem wasn't that he was worshipping on a bama shchutei chutz. That happened during most of the kings in the second temple period until maybe Yoshiyahu's time. Right, Achaz was a big time Oved Avodah Zarah. So the Kalim should have been Asur Midoresa. What good does it do putting in the mikvah and reanointing the Kalim? Mm-hmm. So Rashi explains that the reason why the Kalim weren't Asur Min HaTorah is because Achaz was not able to make them Asur, because the rule is Ein Adam Oser Davar She'ein Shelo. They didn't own them, and therefore he could not actually make it Asur Min HaTorah. But at least Midrabanan, presumably with Maris or something like they should have been Gozer. So says the Gemara, this questioner, doesn't the pasuk mean that they simply reuse the kalim? It means the kalim that didn't do anything wrong, you know, would not have been disqualified. So, Rebbe responds, Amar Lei, I love this, Baruch Atol HaShamayim, blessed are you to God. Why? Shechzart Ali Avedasi, you return my lost object to me. That was the pasuk. And what but he says hechanu means sheganaznum. We put them in Gnisa, we put them away forever. Vehikdashnu shikdashnu achirim tachteim. Now that may not in itself be a compelling reason, but that was Rebbe's tradition of how that pasuk was read. But he forgot which pasuk it was. So the questioner asked him the question from the pasuk. He said, "Thank you very much for returning my lost object. Now I have my pasuk." So now he explains that it means that they put them away permanently. It doesn't sound like it's pshat, but
what does that mean, put them away permanently?
In other words, Geniza means when you have something that had sanctity but can't be used anymore, like we do with the Sefer Torah. We use the term Shemos,
yeah.
Right? But Shemos means something that had God's name in it but is not used anymore. We are gonezed. Geniza is the term the Gemara would use. So, Marshall.
So, just la halacha, every time that the worship of Avodah Zarah was rotated out and someone from came back in, they paskim that in fact the kingdom of the Hadash were never
no, so,
because they were owned by God. And not
Ahaz was the first king that I think we know who worshipped Avodah Zarah in the temple.
Right.
And as until him, there were Bamos. Some of the kings, you know, might have worshipped other gods, even Malchai Yehuda, a couple of them. And mostly it was just on the Bamos, not the kings themselves. The Tanami just says, Acha Bamos Losaru. The Bamos people still. But Achaz was the first one to actually defile the temple in that sense. No king had done it until him.
Right, but I mean, look, whatever, Greeks, whatever you want to talk about, is the concept that God has ownership of the clay Beit HaMikdash, which is why, because I don't remember them destroying, when the Maccabees sort of triumphed,
I don't remember hearing that they just like put all the Kli Beit HaMikdash in Geniza and built brand new ones out of solid gold. Presumably Tiaru Mikdashai. So how did they do that? Is it the same story that God owned the Kalim so nobody could trace them?
I have to call it that. I don't think we're going to get through the whole Gemara today till the Mishnah, but this is actually precisely the Gemara is about to talk about, the stones in the Mizbeach, when they were defiled by the Greeks. So,
the concept of Tumah HaTribut.
No, this is not quite. This is not quite. Well, obviously, no. This is not Tumah HaTribut Tzibur. If something was used Lavo Dezara, in other words, it's possible like Avoa. We wouldn't say that if you had an animal that was, if the Kohanim were all Tame, or the Kelim were all Tame, we would say you bring the Karban, even though there'll be Tumah. But if the only animals you had actually been Neva, they were Muksal Lavo Dezara or something like that, I don't think we would say you bring them. We'd say you don't bring. Okay, so
what's the thread after these psukim?
So the answer is the way he reads the pasuk is that when the kelim were nesar mid the rabbanon only, right? Because achas couldn't make them asur min haTorah. Mm-hmm. Once they were nesar mid the rabbanon, then after that point they didn't use them. So therefore, kelim sheshimshu bahem beis chonyo, we also don't use.
Even though they don't have daf.
Even though they're not b'nei dea. Okay. So I'm not going to read further in the Gemara, but I want to just introduce something which Marshall is starting to grapple with. The central question of Ein Adam Oseh Davar Sheino Shelo and sacred objects. There is an Isser that we refer to as Me'ila. Me'ila means obtaining prohibited Hanah from Hekdesh. It can either be stealing from Hekdesh, or it can actually be being Nehneh from Hekdesh. But as a general rule, in order to violate Me'ila, and right now I'm talking about Beshogeg, what usually comes along and accompanies Me'ila Beshogeg is that the object or the thing that you're Nene from is Yotze Lechulin. Your Aveira actually removes the Kedusha. And therefore, generally speaking, if I violated Me'ila in a way that constitutes Me'ila, I took money from Hekdesh and I took it into my Rishus, or I used something of Hekdesh, most things of Hekdesh, and I got Hana from it, my usage will be Mechalel the Hekdesh, will make it Chulin. Only if it's done B'shogeg. B'mezid, which is not, there is Me'ila B'mezid, but the punishment's totally different. The punishment is Malkos from Misa B'dei Shamayim. Me'ila B'shogeg, you have to pay back the Hana that you got plus a fifth, and you bring a Karban Asham, called the Nasham Me'ilos. So B'shogeg, generally speaking, when you're Moel, the object is Yotze L'chun, it becomes profaned. There are two exceptions to this rule. Behema and Klei Shares. The way most Rishonim, I think, would understand, it means something that has Kedushas HaGuf. When you have an animal that you consecrate, and then it gets a mum, you can redeem the animal. But if the animal has not gotten a mum yet, there is no way to redeem the animal. You can take all the money in the world, you can do an exchange, the money might become Kadosh, I'm not sure it does in that case, the animal remains Kadosh. We sort of know this a little bit, I don't know if it's stated explicitly, from the concept of Tamura. The Torah prohibits in Parshas Bechukos I'm making a Tamura. It means I have an animal that's a Karban, designated for Karban, I want to swap it out. Even if the Torah says, even if you want to give a better one. If I try to swap it out, it doesn't work. The one I tried swapping in becomes Kadosh. There's a slightly lesser Kadosh than the original animal, but the original animal remains untouched, unchanged. So the reason is that it has Kedushas HaGuf, not Kedushas Damin. If I take this Gemara and I dedicate it to Hekdesh, the Gemara doesn't have intrinsic Kedusha, it has Kedushas Damin, because it's not used in the worship, it's not one of the Kelim in the Mikdash, the treasurer is going to sell this and take the money and use it to buy Karbanos. So you can violate Me'ila if you're Nena, if you learn enough blot in this Gemara to constitute a Hanoa of a Shavat Pruta, you'll violate Me'ila, but the Gemara will now become Chulin, and you can be poed at the Gemara. So the rule is that anything that has Kedushas HaGuf, which could be either a Behema, which is a behema tamim, behema tahora, which is tamim, consecrated as a karban, or klei shares, those things, even if you violate get hana from them, b'shogeg, you violate me'ila, but it's not yotzei l'chulin. So the question that we have to explore going forward next week is that there's a pasuk the Gemara is going to quote from Yechezkel about the paritzim, the wicked ones, entering the temple and defiling it. And there seems to be this concept that even though, generally speaking, Jews cannot be mechalal hekdesh when you violate the Isser B'mezid, And behema and klei shares are not yotzei lechulan under any circumstances. There seems to be some kind of special gzeres hakasav, if you might call it, that if the goyim enter the temple and desecrate it or destroy it, that their action actually seems to remove the kedusha from the items in the Beis HaMikdash. And so Marshall's question about when the Greeks entered, right now we're only talking about Jews, but now the Gemara is going to talk about what happens when Gentiles do what they do, and what are the ramifications for the Kedusha of the various things in the Mikdash. What's that? So we'll let us a chance and we'll talk about that when we get into the Gemara. Just in time for